The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickled to death to be with you this Saturday and every Saturday. Seems like about the same time. In the studio, the best fisherman in the United States of America, Mark Tobin. Mark, how you doing?
Way better this week. Last week was a little rough.
I thought you were going to have to euthanize you halfway through the show.
I do. It was not good.
It wasn't good.
I was doing everything I could just to keep my cookies down.
Yeah, I saw that. You went a couple times. You were a trooper. You hung right in there. I was proud of you.
It was a long weekend. I don't know. It was some kind of flu. I've heard that there's something going around, but I don't know how I got it, but I don't want it again. You know, that's the thing about when you get sick. You know, you really take your health for granted.
Oh, yeah.
Until you get to feeling bad. Yeah. And I was beginning to think, the way my stomach hurt and my eyes hurt, I thought, is this my new normal? Because this went on for 4 or 5 days. And thank God it didn't.
My new normal.
Yeah. But, yeah, it makes you really appreciate feeling good when you feel like that.
Well, you were white as a ghost. And now you got color back in you. I think you're going to make it. We took up a collection.
Wow.
You know, we're going to get you buried.
Oh.
You know. But
thank you. A little early on that.
10 of us came up with $14.81.
Well, you got a shovel.
That was a start.
Yeah.
In the deal. What are you going to do when you die? What do you figure? What's going to happen to you?
I'm kind of leaning toward getting cremated and have my ashes made into catfish bait.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's not a bad idea.
Give back. Yeah. Give back to those that have given so much to me.
A catfish might take a bite and go, oh,
yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know, Tobin. I worry about you a lot. Something you're just different. You're unique, as they say.
Yeah, well, I've been called worse.
Oh, boy. The guy that called me at home one day, and he was talking about this radio show, and we were talking, and he said, how'd you get so smart? And I said, whoa, wait a minute.
Hey, what?
I said,
did he know who he was talking to?
A lot of things, but yeah. I've never been called smart.
He must not have known who he was talking to.
My English teacher used to grab me and slap me on top of the head and say, you're just as smart as your brother David.
Well, that didn't help.
My brother Dave was a genius. He was just a wonderful person. You know? Smart. My goodness, he was smart. He's the only one of the Rams that's got a college degree.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm so proud of him.
What happened to you? Too many slaps on the head.
I don't know. I think it was improper potty training when I was a baby.
Well, I've told this before. My sister Jan was babysitting for me and got tired of changing my diaper, and she dropped me on the floor on my head. That has done permanent damage.
Oh, I want to thank her. Amazing. What's the deal? I sent some humans. We were talking about the sleeper spot to go, and since I only got those three listeners, I mentioned my favorite place to fish is Guy Park, and it's up here by Platte City, and there's never no one there. It's a really cool place. Got a nice boat dock and ramp, and works on the deal. And I had some humans go up there and go fishing, and saw several of them. One of them is a gal that works there in Perkins, and we got to talking back and forth, and she really enjoyed it and caught some nice, took her kids, caught some big bluegill, the hybrid size types.
Cool. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I need some of those.
Oh, they're great eating fish.
And they fight great, too.
Yeah.
Pound for pound, they're hard to beat.
She said she fished there, I don't know how long, but they saw one other person there.
No kidding.
I think they came in and turned around in the parking lot and left.
Oh, my gosh.
The deal. So, you know, it's just a real little diamond, you know, that no one knows about and no one ever goes to. And it's gin clear, you know. It's just a beautiful
facility. That sounds wonderful.
You got a little kayak boat or a little bitty boat. Boy, it's just it's a perfect-sized lake. You can get around it.
Do you know if there's a horsepower restriction on that?
I imagine there is. I would assume there would be as small as it is.
Use your trolling motor or something.
when you get there, you look at it, and it's cool. But, boy, I tell you, the fishery of it, the bass down there on the dam, you take a little 6-inch purple worm and go down there with a little piece of split shot in front of it. Ooh, boy, the fight is on. The game's on. Game on.
Give me some of those bluegill.
Oh.
We talked about that last week. That's my favorite fish to eat.
It is.
It's just hard for me to find, you know, big enough ones to flay.
Yeah. Well, it's, I don't know. We always called it the sweet meat.
Right.
And it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just got a different taste.
No, it does.
And I don't know, other than a hybrid, you know, pound for pound. Of course, these things don't get that big, but they really put a tussle, man. It's a ball to catch one of them big hybrids.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking you were talking about the hybrid bluegill, but you're talking about the wiper hybrid.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about hybrid bluegill for, you know, the little bitty things, but man, do they fight.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
They never give up.
No, they turn sideways and really dig into the water. They're just a blast catch.
Oh, yeah. You know, and then that one up there, you know, at Guy Park, if you got for handicap or young kids, you take a bobber and a gob of worms.
Or a bucket of crickets.
Yeah, and you're probably going to do okay. Or go up in the parking lot there and catch a grasshopper if you can find one.
And you probably do pretty good off the bank, can't you?
Oh, yeah. But it's not real accessible off the bank. There's a few places, but it's kind of growed up. But you really, off the dock, you need a little bitty boat is what you need there on this thing. It's a neat little facilities. And the other one that no one ever goes to, and they got hybrids in it, Mark, is over at the Cameron City Reservoirs. Of course, it's way, 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 way down, you know, but there's an awful lot of big hybrids in there. And there's it was on the tip of my tongue. There's a little two or three or four of them around there, little bitty pond.
City and county lakes?
Yeah, right around that little area, and they got weird names and... boy, you know, I was talking to Corey up there one day. He's the fisheries biologist for the MDC up at St. Joe. Great guy. And he said, man, nobody knows about that place. Hmm. It's really, really cool. And I said, well, I can announce on air, but I said, we've only got the three listeners anyway, you know, so what the hey. What do you figure people would get up and listen to us for? Why would they do that?
They obviously have nothing better to do.
As a parent.
But it's amazing to me. I still am marveling at how much traffic is out there this early in the morning.
Yeah.
Where are all these people going?
I don't know. You want to stop and ask them.
God, I tell you, it's terrible. On a Saturday, that many people having to get up this early?
I've always said for years, you ever notice one thing, you never see any rich people up early. They got their employees out there.
Yeah, right.
Those thugs, you know, were out there. But you never see any rich people.
That's true.
Early in the morning. They get around about 10 o'clock, you know. And I'm jealous.
Yeah, I know. Me too. We're losing our daylight.
Yes, isn't that unbelievable?
It's getting light a little later. Yeah. But I tell you, this cool weather these past several mornings, oh, my gosh, it feels like fall.
Yeah, it's not too far away. Now, you know, we're going to have a hot spell here, it sounds like, for a few more days, and then maybe.
Moderate a little bit. Yeah.
But we're losing so much daylight, it doesn't warm up quite a bit, you know, on the deal. Yesterday, I didn't get a chance, but I wanted to just kind of around my neighborhood. I drove back and forth there a couple times, and boy, the corn and the soybeans and that heat yesterday and that wind blowing. And that's the soybeans turned silver look, and the corn is done. It's over. Yesterday was, if you had any moisture, which we don't in Buchanan County, and especially around Stuartsville, Cameron, up through there. But, it just toasted it yesterday. And there's going to be an awful lot of 50-bushel corn up in that quadrant up through there. And that doesn't even get close to making the note at the bank, you know. It's going to be blood in the streets, I'm afraid. It's not looking good for farmers.
Hate to hear that.
And I hope they're insured. You know, at least with your insurance, you can pretty well get your seed costs back. Sometimes your diesel fuel, you know. But the problem with it is, you know, you can stand out there and tell your corn's no good. You got to combine it to satisfy the insurance claim, which always amazed me, but what the hey. You know, that's the way it's set up. But I'm telling you, it's not going to be good. Now, on the plus side of things, me and my buddy Bill Slusher took a little tour and ran into a monster whitetail still in the velvet.
Oh, wow.
So we did see that. September 1st is the opening day of dove season, which is not that far away now.
No.
And that's on a Saturday. I was looking for some dove fields, didn't see much. There is a website from the MDC that'll tell you what dove field would be around. King City got a public hunting area up there. I don't know if they put sunflowers in it, but that's always a sleeper. There's always a good spot right there. Bilby Ranch, Nottoway Valley up north. If you guys are looking for places to, it's going to be crowded because of Saturday. You know, everybody's going to be off work, I hope. More shells are shot opening day of dove season than all the hunting seasons combined.
I can understand that.
Almost hit one once in 1969. And everybody still talks about it.
No.
And they're fast.
Oh, yeah, they're just crazy. Now, do you believe in decoys or not? The little spinning?
Oh, jury's out. I've seen, it's just like any other hunting thing, Mark. You know, just some days it seems like it works and some days it don't, you know. Nobody's ever going to fool them, you know. But, you know, if it gives you confidence, you think you're going to try them. You know, I've seen them work.
I've seen them slow down,
yeah.
Take a look, and that's all it took. You know, just slow down a little.
Yeah. And yeah, I am seeing a lot of doves.
Real? Oh, that's good.
So I ran into a hen turkey with 6-8 little ones.
Oh, wow.
Except they was almost big as mama's.
Real?
So
wow, cool.
I did see that. So that was encouraging. Did start seeing a few more deer tracks. I have places that I've been around, and I've seen a lot of roosters, a lot of little baby pheasants all over. The other day, I was up at the duck club working, one crowing out there in a cornfield somewhere in the middle of summer, you know, which I thought was kind of weird. But I am seeing some quail around, hearing some quail. Not very many, but there is some on the deal. But, you know, this drought is not all bad, you know. I think a lot of the brood hatch survived. And the deal. There is a study out that I should think we should pass along. There was a study of 25 hen turkeys on the nest. 23 were predated by raccoons.
Oh, no. That's not good.
So what I would, if I was the Pope, I would have taken them as what we call a nuisance and take all the limits and regulations off raccoons and it'll start, the hunters will eliminate them. A little bit.
Oh, that's not good.
Oh, boy. It's devastating, the turkey population, because they learn to eat them eggs real, real quick, you know. So that's the biggest thing right now, I think, facing wildlife until they get a distemper, and a Mother Nature pretty well cures them out. But, you know, and allegedly, I read on the Internet, can you believe anything on the Internet?
No, okay. Absolutely not.
Read on the Internet that fur prices are supposed to do a little bit of a rebound this fall. So if that happens, then the trappers will get back out on the deal. But I talked to a lot of farmers, and they've had it, you know, with the coons, and they're taking steps to eliminate them. And they've got a mixture of antifreeze and something else they put in. Out for him, can't let the dog drink it, but if he does, it'll kill the dog. But
fly bait.
Yeah, they. One guy had in just a few nights had 16 dead ones around his farm.
Good gosh!
You know, and when you're driving through like the city of St. Joe in a parkway in the middle of the day, and you see coons walking around, that's out of bounds.
In the middle of the day, that's
there's something wrong here on this thing.
My mom last year had a raccoon that came down her fireplace, got in her house, and she could hear something in the house, but she was too afraid from the noise to get up and see what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this raccoon went through the whole house and tore down almost every blind in the house. I assume it was trying to get out.
I'm sure.
But you would not believe the amount of damage that it did.
Yeah.
And it would come back every night. And I wound up having to – I figured out a way to get that – the fireplace door closed where it couldn't push it open with a bunch of different weights and stuff. And then we had a trapping company come in and trap six.
Six of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But it was crazy how much, and it was just every blind was bent. It was like he grabbed it right in the middle and slid down.
Yeah.
And every blind was the same way. Got up onto the kitchen counter and it was just unbelievable the amount of damage that those little rascals can do.
Watching a video where a bear got inside of a car the other day and then slammed the door, and there he was inside.
Oh, that's not good.
Oh, devastated.
It totaled that car.
We got to take a little bit of a break. We are brought to you by Highway Trailer Sales Incorporated, my good friend Terry Lee. This is the kind of guy, I guess I should tell this. He's listening at 1850 Southern Road, and if you guys that have 18-wheelers and you got a trailer that's in disrepair and need brakes or it's been damaged or whatever, this is the guy you talk to. When you become a sponsor of a radio show, I go meet him. And I met Terry, and we talked for 10 or 15 minutes. I didn't issue him a contract. I said, we'll just do this on a handshake.
That's the kind of people you like to do business
that's
with.
That's what I do business yep. with. I know I'm old-fashioned, and I know that people have taken advantage of me over the years, but that's okay. It always comes back. But if you like a guy that's a straight shooter, honest, sincere, dedicated to your profession to help you with your 18-wheeler, there's no finer human. And I mean this from my heart. This is the finest person I've met in years and years and years other than Mark Tobin. Highway Trailer Sales. He is located at 1850 Southern Road, got 10 bays. He can handle anything that you got a problem with on those guys. You're getting ready to cut some corn and some soybeans, what's left of them. You're going to need to haul them to town. Well, you need the trailer in great shape. So got too many farmer friends to go down and do business with him. Again, it's Highway Trailer Sales. Again, they're located at 1850 Southern Road, just off 435. They're just west of Worlds of Fun. Tell you what, tell him you heard it here on WHB. Got to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm your host, Fred Ramsey, along with my co-host, the best fisherman in America, Mark Tobin. We are brought to you by KingCityLumberCompany.com. Go to their website. You guys need a horsey barn, which, Mark, have you bought a horse yet?
No.
Would you like to have a horse in your backyard?
I've got two in my backyard. Well, it's my neighbor's backyard.
Do you go pet them?
I give them carrots, yes.
Do you ever give them sugar, a lump of sugar?
No.
Are you supposed to give horses like sugar?
Probably not.
Probably not.
I think they like it.
I don't think anybody's supposed to have sugar, according to the USDA.
Right.
Oh, well, who cares? KingCityLumber.com. These are my buddies, Marty and Monty Tunks. I've been around doing this for a lot of years. Know a lot of the buildings that they put up through northwest Missouri. Know a lot of farmers up through there. And there is no finer. And if you want a garage built, you want a shed in the backyard for your horsey, a loafing shed. I had a loafing shed.
Yeah, until the tornado
took it away. Took it home. Took it back to Kansas.
And several pieces.
54 pieces. I might as well laugh about it. What the hey. But anyway, King City Lumber, go to their website. I've got too many people that tell me, you know, Kelly that was on with us, they built his garage or shed out by his farm. They use first-rate lumber. They're master carpenters. There is none, no finer, and I mean that from my heart. It's KingCityLumber.com, 660-535-4337. That's 660-535-4337 or KingCityLumber.com. You will spend some time on their website. That's how cool the buildings look. You go, ooh, wow, ooh, that's neat, you know. Maybe on a cabin. You know, Mark, you ever think about building a cabin in the woods?
I have not.
Never have?
No.
Did you get to do any fishing this week?
I didn't. I was sick over the weekend, so I didn't do much of anything. But they're still catching a lot of fish out there. Truman is just amazing, the amount of crappie that are being caught out of that lake all summer. I mean, it's been good all year, winter, spring, and now in the summer. It's really good. Now, seems like the pattern hasn't changed much. Fish the main lake, flats. Anywhere from 12 to 15 foot of water is the best, but they're catching some as shallow as 6 foot. From what I hear, there's a few more little ones getting mixed into the bunch. It seems like the little ones are really chowing down right now. So take a bunch of minnows. Minnows are definitely better than without, and have plenty of them because there's a lot of little fish that you're going to have to go through to get your keepers. But you'll have no problem down there getting a limit. The Truman is 9 inches low right now, so they're not running any water to speak of. Down below the dam hadn't been all that great, but up on the lake is still good. And the whites and the hybrids are biting good. In the evening, there's tons of shad out on Truman
now. That's what I hear.
And there is some surface activity going on in the evenings, probably early in the morning as well. Other than that, a lot of guys are catching hybrids, but they're catching them in 25 foot of water, and live bait has been better. And I'd rather catch them on a spoon or some kind of an artificial. I love spoon fishing this type of year for whites and hybrids. It's just tough to keep shad alive, tough to get them.
Yeah, tough to keep them alive.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Thing about them.
And on the minnows, too, Chap Martin, our guide buddy over in Kansas, what he likes to do with his minnows, you know, you go out and buy them in the morning and take them out on the lake, and it gets hot so quick, it's just hard to keep them alive.
They croak out.
Right, but he gets them the day before and puts them in his garage and lets the water heat up, you know, warm up gradually overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And he says they stay alive a whole lot better the next day rather than going through that shock of that water warming up so fast. So do that if you're going to use minnows, get them the day before.
The bite on the weir, have you heard anything?
Nope. Only really when they're – you can catch a few there anytime, but it really shines when they're drawing water over the top of it. It just makes a good current break on the backside of it, and that's what draws so many, you know, bait fish get in there, try to get out of the current, and, of course, the game fish, they know that.
On the east side of the weir, or the dam.
Mm-hmm. The dam side.
The bluff that comes straight down into the water right there.
Oh, yeah, by the observatory?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some guys I was talking to had been trolling some crankbaits across there, running them really, really deep, just knocked the sparks out of hybrids right there.
I bet that'd be a good place for it.
So that kind of gave them a pattern, and so they went to wherever the bluffs dropped straight off. And they didn't have a great fishing trip, but they had a very adequate fishing trip, caught a lot of huge, huge hybrids.
Well, we were talking a little earlier about the walleye initiative and whether it's working or not. But they're catching a lot of walleye on Truman, and still today they are, either drifting night crawlers on flats or trolling crankbaits. And they are able to target them and catch limits just pretty much every day that some of these guys go out.
Yeah.
So it seems to be working pretty good on Truman. I can't say that a lot of other places, but seems like it's pretty good, and they're catching some nice fish.
Well, you know, that's my hot button, and we talk about this maybe too much about the walleye and cost effectiveness of it. You know, I just wonder sometimes, you know, if it's really, really good. Now, they did, well, they were trolling around one of the bluffs. They did catch a 24-inch walleye.
Nice.
That's a nice fish.
Wow, yeah.
I don't know what that would weigh. 4 pounds?
Probably.
Four, maybe 4.5, huh?
Yep.
If you're a liar fisherman.
If you're a liar fisherman,
five,
that's pushing 8.
Maybe pushing 8. Weigh your thumb, he's 5. But, you know, it's still just, that's about the right eating size.
All of them are good eating
size.
Yeah,
but boy, you know, you can really get a chunk of meat off them.
Boy.
Unbelievable.
That sounds good.
I don't know. You know, Truman, you know, we talk about this every Saturday. And that lake absolutely amazes me. It just keeps producing.
Yeah.
Now, we had there was a cycle in there, 5 years ago or 5 or 6 years ago. It wasn't really that great. It still was very good.
But, and that's typical of most lakes. You have good years, good spawns, and for 3 or 4 years seems like you have really good fishing, and then things cycle back around.
Yeah.
Just kind of the way of life on the lake.
Yeah.
Well, but it's good. Lake of the Ozarks, crappie fishing has picked up over there, and catching a few white bass. But I'm a little concerned on the white bass fishing on Lake of the Ozarks. For the last couple of years, it seems to me, we find fish, and we'll catch quite a few, but we're finding them in, like, one spot rather than five or six
spots
like we do on good years. And last year in particular, we caught some of the biggest, on average, white bass that I've ever caught on Lake of the Ozarks. But we weren't catching anything else other than those big ones. And that kind of is putting up a red flag to me, too.
Yeah.
Seems like there's not a lot of year class support coming along. And it's really good if you catch a lot of different sizes of fish. Then you know you've had a good spawn. But I'm not seeing it. And I've been saying this for 3 years now. And it's been a little tough. It's been real tough on the white bass so far this year. You could put it off to the hot weather and not much rain and not very much water moving through the system. But I don't know. We'll see what happens when it cools down a little bit. But I'm a little concerned on the white bass fishing on Lake of the Ozarks.
You know, the lakes, what year did they build Ozarks? 50?
32, I think, 32, is when it was impounded.
32?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. 32, 34.
Well, it's cycled ever since I was a kid fishing it. I mean, you had years down there that was just, you could do no wrong. And then you had years down there that you go, oh, man, this
right.
is tough.
Right. On
so,
every species of fish.
I think it's probably a cycle.
Yeah, well, and we just have had dry springs. And without water coming in those major creek arms, you don't get good spawns. And I that's what I think the problem is. We just haven't had very good spawns the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll come back.
Yeah.
You know, I think it will, you know.
It usually does.
Yeah. You know, but, boy, I tell you, the weather, everybody talks about it, nobody can do anything about it, but it's just so weird, the weather anymore.
Yeah. I guess June was horrible. May and June were terrible. I mean, it's been dry all along. Even through the winter, we didn't have a lot of precipitation.
Yeah.
But it was so hot in May and June and July. And then July ended off, that was just beautiful.
Yeah.
Highs in the, in, you know, one day close to 80 in the upper 70s. And the lows, yeah. We had some lows in
perfect
the 50s.
Fishing weather.
Oh, my God. That, I mean, that felt like fall.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm sure we'll get another high
spell. I mowed my yard one day in July, excuse me, in July, and I had to went in and put in a long sleeve shirt, you know, that one morning.
Isn't that wonderful?
Now it's completely gone the other way. We are brought to you. We've got to take a little break. Oh, we're going to have Matt Chouinard on with Delta Waterfowl for you duckaholics. I hope you are listening. We ought to have some numbers maybe from him. The North Dakota Fish and Game already put out their numbers. I don't think anybody of the U.S. Fish and Game hadn't got their official numbers out. It's not all doom and gloom, it doesn't sound to me like, but that's who's going to be our guest for the last 30 minutes of the show. We're going to talk with Delta Waterfowl. A couple little things that you should know about today. My good friend Gary Clark, if you are a first responder, law enforcement, they're giving away a bunch of hot dogs and food today. They're going to start today at 10 a.m. and go to 4 p.m. at G&M Firearms over in Wathena, Kansas, which is 10 miles west of St. Joseph, Missouri on 36 Highway. And this is my guy. This is the guy that works on my guns. This is the only guy I know that I can trust 110%. He's been so good to me. And he wants to pay back, too. He's got a great store, great facilities over there. So go by and see him today from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Also, we are brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, my good friend Trevin. I had a nice visit with Trevin yesterday.
One of the nicest guys that I've ever met.
I think so. If he's in the top 10, isn't he?
Oh, I'm telling you. And it just trickles down from him into that dealership. I mean, it is such a well-run place, and it's just the friendliest people there. What an absolute treat it is to buy a vehicle from Reed Chevrolet.
Can't say. I mean, we go on and on and on. If you're looking for a used one, he's got a huge inventory. They've got $15,000 back on Silverado. See, the 19s will be hitting.
Oh, that's right.
Pretty darn quick. So if you're in the mode today to deal with an honest, upfront, straight-charging guy, a Marine veteran who has a Purple Heart, a great guy. I can't say enough good adjectives about him. Go by and see the fantastic people at Reed Chevrolet, non-commissioned salespeople. All they do is help you and not going to hustle you at all. So anyway, go by and see him. We've got to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to get Matt Chouinard with Delta Waterfowl. Ought to make a good radio show. Put your feet up, grab you that second cup of coffee, and we'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. I was just telling Mark I watched Wildfowl or something that's on Outdoor Channels last night. Ian Kennedy was on there working his dog with Hoach Aver. Huh. Wow, what a deal to watch. That dog of his, Ian's got, is lights out.
Is that right? No, cool.
That dog, they told him to go left, he went left. I mean, he told the dog to go right, the dog went right.
Huh.
I could just tell, and it didn't show the dog that much, but I can tell. I've been around that long enough in my career that I went, wow.
I'll be darned.
So I texted Ian last night, and I said, who in the world trained that dog? I was hoping he said he did, but he didn't. But we got to get that trainer. Huh. I don't know who he is. We can get him on the air. I begged him to get a hold of him, see if he'd come on the air with us. I've never seen a dog perform like that.
I'll be darned.
You know what happens when you have a dog and you get bragging on them?
No.
They make a liar out of you immediately. Yeah, you tell them go left, they go right.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
You tell them go long, they go short, you know. But this dog here, he just had that look. You know, he was looking at everything going around him all the time. He had his heads up. He knew that something was supposed to be serious here. You know?
I love it.
Boy, that dog performed. Man, I like to have a pup out of that dog. That dog I got now is brain dead. I'm going through the terrible twos with him. And the dog is definitely needs some medication. something wrong with this dog I got.
I saw a post on Facebook. It was a picture of a lab, and it said, "Oh, your dog is scared on 4th of July, all the fireworks going off. My dog's running around the house looking for something dead, for the bird."
Same with mine. when the fireworks went off in the backyard, he was running back and forth in the kennel looking up in the air. You know, he wasn't scared of nothing.
Looking for that duck.
Yeah. You know, he thought, "Hey, boy, it's opening day again." Yeah. You know. Oh, well, what the hey. Well, we're going to talk with Matt Schnard with Delta Waterfront. Matt, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Fred.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah.
Finally.
Guess we had a little problem last week.
Well, these people in North Dakota, a lot of them can't read, write, add, or subtract. Did you know that?
Well, you always complain about the duck numbers and their ability not to count right. So maybe I can understand that.
Before we get started here, Matt, and Matt's with Delta Waterfowl, one of my favorite duck rearing organizations. Have you got any dirt on John Debney? Is there anything derogatory we could say about him or hold it over his head?
You know, not a whole lot. He's actually a pretty good guy for the most part. We like to tease him a little bit, but he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good human. Didn't he get promoted or what? I saw something happen good to him.
I believe his title now is he's the senior vice president of Delta Waterfowl, and he's our he's our tie to Washington D.C. I mean, he's our head policy guy and has done a bunch of amazing stuff for Delta here, especially in the last few years, but for as long as he's been with Delta.
Boy, he's a good human though. I really love him. He's a good guy. And he can't shoot very good, but he's a good guy. But he tries.
I'll agree with that.
He tries. He blows holes in the air. And he said to me one day, he said, "Well, I don't know if anybody wants a limit anymore or not." And I thought, yeah, that's a cop-out. Matt, what's your function up there with Delta Waterfowl? What do you do?
Well, I guess my title is the Senior Waterfowl Programs Manager.
I love that one.
You that follow Delta probably have seen me associated with the hen house program. That's what I did my graduate research on, and so I manage Delta's hen house program. But I'm also a big part of our predator management programs and research programs, making sure the delivery of those programs each spring and summer are happening, I guess you'd say.
You guys started the hen house project, and I'm sorry I'm stepping on you there, but when you started the hen house project, it's kind of a hot button with me. I had some people said, "This is a joke. What are they doing? What do they think they're doing?" Is there any track record to show? Maybe we should stop real quick here. The hen house project is what, I guess? Maybe that'd be the first step A.
Well, hen houses are a type of mallard nest structure. Up here in the prairies, you'll see them if you spend any time up here hunting. They look like a tunnel. They're made out of wire and flax straw, and they're put up on a post over the water. And basically, the benefit of them is that mallards will nest in them. Mallards are adaptable. They'll nest just about anywhere. And when they nest in these hen houses above the water, they're safe from, predators like raccoons and skunks and foxes and coyotes. Those are the main reason any duck nest wouldn't hatch. And so you put those things up in a wetland up here in the prairies where there's high densities of nesting mallards, and the likelihood of success or nest success is really high. In most cases, over 60%, and many areas, over 80%.
Hmm. Wow.
And so then when you compare that to where a mallard would naturally nest on the ground, in the grass or in a pasture, a hay field, or, the grass along the road, nest success in those areas is considerably lower. And the areas we target, mallards, of course, their nest success is really low. In some cases, like in Minnedosa, Manitoba, where we've done a lot of work, mallard nest success on the ground is often less than 5%. Hmm. So when you can give them that big of an increase in nest success, you boost production significantly, and increase the number of mallards flying south.
Exactly. I know that predation, eating the eggs, but at the other step of that, sometimes they consume the hen while she's on the nest too, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, in some areas, 30 to 40% of the hens, so the mallard hens, are killed in
wow.
the spring by some manner of predator. And hen houses, usually when those predators are catching hens, it's on the nest. She's, very dedicated mom, and will sit tight on that nest. And you were just talking about dogs. I mean, you can imagine a coyote or a fox. I mean, they have to find food to survive, right?
And sure.
So they're pretty good at catching a hen on a nest. And when in a hen house, those same predators aren't going to be able to get to her. Hawks and owls, there's a wire over the top of them, so they can't get them either. And so there's been some research. Delta conducted some research. Well, it's probably 15 years ago now, but a student actually found that hens that nested in the hen house had a 20% higher likelihood of surviving the nesting season, which that's a pretty big deal.
Yes, it is. It sure is.
Hey, Matt, are you still putting out new hen houses, or has construction stopped on them?
Well, we're still putting out new hen houses, but it's generally a winter job. We put them out. We want them to be in as best shape as possible for ducks when they arrive. And it, quite simply, it's much easier to do the work in winter. Everything's frozen up here. You can drive a snowmobile right out onto the ice, drill a hole in with your ice auger, and pound a post in and do it. But we're still installing hen houses. I think we've got a few hundred planned to go in this year. We've got over 8,000 out
wow.
in the prairies,
wow,
mostly
great.
Prairies right now. And they're still doing really well.
Is this hen house a maintenance freak?
It is not maintenance free. Just like any nest structure, you have to go and clean out the nest material from the year before, and you got to make sure they have nest material. Ducks aren't like other birds. They won't bring grass with them to the nest site. So you have to make sure there's grass in that tunnel every year.
Ooh.
So, I mean, there is some work involved with it, and that's where we hire what we call hen house delivery specialists. They're, regional contractors that go out and maintain them each winter, usually, January, February, March, right before the ducks show up.
That's got to be a little bit of a chore. Over 8,000 boxes you have to. Ooh, that's.
Well, I talked to a human. I'm not going to go where I'm going with that. But he said it's about like you guys taking a bucket of water out of the ocean. He said it's just a joke.
Right.
I mean.
There's definitely different opinions on intensive management, what we call intensive management, but. We feel, there's areas of these, the breeding grounds up here in the prairies that they're almost a population sink. There's continually ducks nesting there and not producing enough to replace their own population. And so we feel that hen houses, are a great way to boost production in those areas and make sure that they're actually productive. And, we've made a huge investment. And you could say that's kind of a drop in the bucket, but we've made a huge investment in habitat and everything else around, across the prairies. And we want to make sure that habitat that we've preserved is productive.
Yeah. Well, 8,000 sounds like an awful lot, but in the scheme of things, it's a pretty minor deal, as far as a total flyway picture,
right.
But you got to go somewhere. You just can't stand and wring your hands and hope something happens. It's got merit. I'd like to
right.
see the project in a 40 or 50,000 hen houses, but again, the maintenance, the man hours that would be involved in this would be a logistics nightmare, let alone a tough uphill battle on the deal. But got to do something.
We could certainly. We could certainly get there, Obviously, money is, of course, the biggest issue there is, being able to afford to manage 40 to 50,000 of them. But, we've grown quite a bit, in some years, well over 1,000 hen houses in a year, a couple of years. And, in terms of growth, and yeah, I think they, you know, they're not the end solution. That's why we have a bunch of different programs that kind of work towards a bunch of, you know, needs for ducks.
Yeah. Well, again, it can't stand wring your hands, hope things change, or you can make things happen. It's kind of like real life, you know. You can either worry about something or go change. You guys are trying on a deal. What's DU say about your project? Do they think it's tomfoolery, or what are they thinking? Do you think you're focused right in the right direction?
You know, I haven't had a lot of deep conversations with them, but, you know, it wasn't too long ago where, you know, in the 80s when duck numbers were really down, I think everybody was searching for solutions, and nest structures at that time were thought to be, you know, a number one. I mean, if you go to some of the old management plans from the 80s for the wetland management districts here, you know, putting up a bunch of nest structures was one of their goals. And then, you know, we had the 90s, we had Conservation Reserve Program. We had lots of water on the prairies, and everyone's opinion kind of shifted a bit, right? I mean,
yeah,
Mother Nature made things happen, and duck numbers rebounded and have been high basically for almost 25 years. Yeah. And so, you know, these intensive projects kind of fell by the wayside, but we've always felt that there's going to be another drought. There's going to be another situation where there's limited water, limited ability to produce ducks on the landscape, and that's where these tools would come in.
Yeah. Well, again, as I said earlier, you can stand and wring your hands and hope things change, or you can go out there and try, you know, and make things happen on the deal. What about your predation problem up there? You guys have taken some pretty drastic steps to eliminate some of the predators, haven't you?
Right. Well, I think we have a very targeted program called predator management, where we find those areas where there's very high nesting densities of ducks and low production, I guess you'd say. You know, there's limited grass, so the ducks that are nesting there have low nest success, high hen mortality, and so we hire trappers to go to those areas and do selective trapping of the key nest predators to boost duck production.
Mm-hmm. Any success in that? I mean, have you got any surveys or studies about that? Is it impacting that area pretty heavily?
Absolutely. We've been doing some manner of predator management research since the mid-90s for ducks here in North Dakota. You know, when you find the right landscape where there's that low grass, low nesting cover, but high densities of ducks, you know, the average nest success on a you know, 36 square mile predator management block is 35%. On a non-trapped, a similar non-trapped block nearby, it will be, you know, 10 to 12%.
Wow.
So almost a threefold increase in nest success.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And it benefits a wider suite of birds as well. I mean, you know, all upland nesting ducks are benefited there instead of just mallards with the hen house.
Hmm. Well, you're a good human, I understand, by talking to John Debney. Where'd you go to college at?
I went to college at the University of Missouri.
Oh, no.
I'm actually a Boot Heel boy. I grew up in Sykeston, Missouri.
Oh, well, we won't hold that against you. Get him off the air, guys. We don't allow Missourians on the air.
No.
You got a degree in waterfowl management?
Well, from Mizzou, I was a fisheries and wildlife major, and then I, you know, went to graduate school and got a wildlife science degree from Mississippi State University. So, yeah, I guess that's what my field of study is. I became a waterfowl guy, you know, essentially at Delta. That's one of our big historical things, is that we were a big research organization and still are.
Sure.
And so just working for Delta as a student in the late 90s, I mean, it was like you were going to a school specifically to learn about waterfowl.
I'll bet. Well, you're a great organization. All you need is cash flow, and I hope our listeners would take time to send you $5 or $50 or $5,000, whatever would deem appropriate in your financial situation. Because, you know, I got involved with you guys, and you don't know this, but back in the 80s, and I asked them, one of my pointed questions was, I want to see your revenue, I want to see your books and how you're spending the money. And they opened up the books and showed it to me and gave me all the facts, figures, dates, times, and number. Very honest group, and I appreciated that. And ever since then, I became a very intense fan of Delta Waterfowl. But you just need money, and you need to get going again. The reason why we have you on the show today, one of the other reasons was, is that everybody I talk to, and oh boy, do I, want to know what in the world happened to the ducks this year. Is there a hatch at all anywhere across the Midwest?
You know, Fred, it's kind of interesting. If you would ask me, you know, in January this year what it was going to look like this spring, I was a pretty sad guy at that time. We had, you know, last summer and fall and pretty much across the prairies was really dry. And then in the winter, same situation. I mean, we had almost no snow here in North Dakota through the first month or two of the year, and then somewhere in February and March it started snowing, and we had some really big storms. You probably may have heard about the one that came across South Dakota and Minnesota and dropped, you know, record snowfalls, and that was, I think, in March. And then we had April and still snowing all the way through mid-April, and it went from being really, really bad to not great, but okay. Mm-hmm. We had some temporary and seasonal wetlands in the Dakotas for sure, and, you know, western Minnesota. And then it was a late spring. We didn't really open up here till probably around April 15th, which is a little bit late. I mean, oftentimes we'll have ducks nesting by then.
Sure.
And then it started raining, and we didn't have widespread rains for the most part. There were those real, you know, spotty thunderstorms. But there's some parts of North Dakota here that you would think, I mean, they were in, you know, serious high water issues, like southeastern North Dakota. And I really think, I mean, I'm more of an optimist, I guess. I'm a duck hunter, right?
But yeah, sure.
I think that there was actually some fairly decent production, probably better nesting effort this year than last year.
Really? Wow. Cool.
So, I mean, it's not, if you look at the, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service BPOP survey is not out yet and will be, I think, this month at some point. But the North Dakota Game and Fish Survey, North Dakota, and the numbers here were a little bit less than last year in terms of number of ducks, but last year was, you know, in the top 10 highest, so it's still pretty good. And the wetland numbers were lower here, but they did that survey in, well, it would be in May.
Sure.
And so they since that time, we've had quite a bit of rain, and so I think habitat conditions, if anything, have improved since then. So we're still seeing broods out there that are pretty young. That tells me that there's enough groceries out there that they're still making an effort.
Well, that's good.
That's good. okay, I'm going to put you on the spot. Is this classified as a C+, a B-, a D? Where are we at on the grade on this hatch?
Well, I would, boy, that's a tough one. I would probably say a B. I'm not going to call it. We definitely don't have the wetland conditions to get really high. Maybe a B-, but I, you know, going into this year, I thought it was going to be a D. So I'm thinking it's kind of an average year, if you might say.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I want to thank you for we finally got together. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're going to write a check for a waterfowl organization, please get a hold of Delta Waterfowl and talk to these fantastic people. This is Matt Schran with, who is the a Missouri reject, as we say. Had to go to North Dakota to get out of the heat, didn't you? You don't like us anymore?
Well, I went to North Dakota to go where the ducks nest.
I understand.
Basically what brought me here.
Are you going to come duck hunt with me this fall?
Hey, is this an invite?
Yes, it is.
I'll have to make a trip down.
All right. We got one last
year. I've never heard of that area, so I'd love to.
We got a duck last year. We were so proud of him. What the hey. Hey, Matt, thank you.
All right.
All right, buddy. I'll be talking to you later. I'll try to call you later today.
Okay.
All right, Matt.
Good talking to you, Matt.
Yeah. What a great guy.
Great organization.
Great organization. Hey, that's encouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not near as doom and gloom as I was thinking.
Boy.
Because I heard some pretty sad stories.
Oh, it was just doom and gloom and oh, my goodness, and oh, what are we going to do, and woe is me type thing. And I went, wait a minute, let's talk to these duck biologists first, you know.
Doesn't sitting in a duck blind on a chilly day sound good right now?
Yeah, and a cup of coffee in your hand.
Oh, that
the sweet smell of gunpowder.
Won't be long.
Some singed feathers around. You know?
And I'll be in the boat fishing for crappie.
Yeah, you go. And Paul's your cup of tea. Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see ya, I hope we see you in a great outdoors.
Have a great week. So long, everybody.